From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
And yes, indeed, it is the Boomer and the Babe Show. It is Tuesday, September 25th, 2012, 11 o'clock in the morning, still barely the morning on the West Coast, and 2 o'clock in the afternoon on the East. We welcome all of those that are listening live and hope that you enjoy our conversation that we're going to have today. Also invite you to go to boomerandthebabe.com, look up and see what everything that Boomer and the Babe Incorporated is involved in, including our e-books, mini-books, and our online magazine, Boomer Experience Speaks. You're welcome to sign up for that. It's absolutely no charge. Every 4 to 6 weeks, we'll send you another edition of Boomer Experience Speaks. We have many of our show guests that have written articles for us and are in that publication. So I hope you do that and I hope you enjoy it. Deborah's not here today. She, as a matter of fact, she's on a conference call as we speak, and she'll be hopefully back with us again on one of these shows in the not-too-distant future. She's been very busy doing a lot of other things. The regular listeners to the show have heard that before, but we're going to proceed without her, and my guest today that I want to introduce is Leslie Davenport. Leslie Davenport has unique qualifications in the body-mind-spirit field. San Francisco Chronicle's dance critic Alan Ulrich reviewed Leslie's professional dancer and says he was endowed with powers of communication that set her apart from the herd. Amongst other things that she's accomplished, she has a passion for the mystery of the human spirit, which drew her to become an ordained interfaith minister in 1984. Welcome to the Boomer and the Babe Show, Leslie Davenport.
Oh, thank you. Very happy to be here.
Well, we're certainly glad to have you. I warned you before we came on air that I was going to ask you for your two-minute movie, which is all about you. It's your little more personal bio about you don't have to tell us what post office your picture's in. That's not but anything else you care to tell us, we are all ears, so please.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, since you mentioned my background as a dancer, maybe I'll start there, because while it's not my current focus, it definitely paved the way for what I'm doing now. And the type of dance was ballet and modern dance as a performer. But what interested me, rather than thinking of it as entertainment, was understanding the relationship between what we're thinking, what we're feeling, and how our body expresses it. So in those early days, for me, it was about creative expression. But I just continued with that exploration. When we think, when we're feeling something, what does our body do? And it eventually moved from an artistic arena into going back to school and getting licensed as a psychotherapist, and then took that same question with me actually into a hospital setting. And I've been involved in the hospitals since 1989, helping people learn how they can use their thoughts and their feelings to support their health and healing, or what are the things we do unknowingly that may actually create a certain level of wear and tear on our bodies and how we can remedy that ourselves.
Well, that sounds very interesting, and I'm looking forward to having this conversation today. But before we get into that, let's get a couple of definitions out of the way, if you don't mind.
Okay.
What is a psychologist versus a psychiatrist versus a psychotherapist?
Therapist. Okay. Yeah, it is a little confusing because those titles get tossed around a lot. A psychotherapist is kind of a generic umbrella for someone who provides a counseling service, but there's different kinds of degrees and credentials that can fall under that title. So, for example, a psychologist, to have that title, requires a PhD And then every state's a little bit different, but all of them require a certain amount of hours of supervised internship experience and then some kind of a state board that allows you to be licensed. So other professions that fall under the psychotherapy category could include social workers, which is a master's degree in social work plus internship plus exams, or a marriage and family therapist, which is what I am, which is a master's degree in counseling psychology. And in California, it involves 3,000 hours of supervised experience and then 2 state exams to become licensed. So it's a pretty involved road, that's for sure.
It used to be said, and I don't know if it was true then or if it is true now, that at some point in California, you could hang out a shingle and call yourself doctor, and you could not practice medicine per se, as far as prescriptions and so on and so forth, but the term doctor was pretty loosely used. Was that the case, or am I imagining I heard that somewhere?
Well, what I do know is true that's similar, although I haven't heard that with doctor so much, is that the word counselor in and of itself is loosely used, versus if you say therapist, you have to back it with degrees and licensure. But if you just say counselor, you provide counseling, that actually doesn't require a particular degree.
Oh, okay. So yeah. there is some vagary there.
If
somebody is of a mind to avail themselves and try to make a buck on the vagary, huh?
Yeah, it is a little unfortunate. Or sometimes people are well-intended but just haven't put in the time for training. Like maybe they took a workshop and thought, oh, this is great, I want to pass it along. But, they find themselves in hot water because when we're working with people and the complexities of our personalities and our lives and how we're put together, it takes some time to really understand more fully how to work effectively and not inadvertently even cause harm.
Well, yes, you're dealing with something there as fragile as the psyche.
Yeah.
You really do have to be, that's why even sometimes when you're involved in just a regular conversation with somebody and they say, what do you think? I go, I'm really not qualified to say. Because I don't need to have this thing go deep six on you and have you come back to me and say, you told me to do that.
yeah. But advice is given awfully freely. It's true.
Yeah, and it's probably worth everything you pay for it.
Yeah.
It's worth every penny you paid for it or didn't pay for it. In the course of your studies and so on, what was it that you say that it prompted you with regard to your dance was what you started making some realizations there. Mm-hmm. And then in the next couple of lines down in your bio, it says, the history of the human spirit drew you to become an ordained interfaith minister in 1984.
Yeah.
Do you still practice as an ordained interfaith minister, or?
Well, yes and no, and I'll tell you what I mean by that vague answer.
Sure.
Probably the most active way that I use my ministry these days is performing ceremonies, a lot of weddings, sometimes memorials, sometimes a baby blessing. And the reason it's not more than that is my schedule is so full these days between the counseling and my hospital work, and I do a fair amount of teaching outside of the hospital in some universities, that I really don't have time to do more. But the other way that it becomes a part of what I do in a less formal way is when I work with people, and you can imagine, especially if there's a health crisis going on or any kind of a life crisis, for many, many people, the spiritual aspects or beliefs often come into play either as a form of support if someone has a strong faith tradition, or it sometimes gets called into question. You know, when I've worked with someone, for example, who's had a pretty healthy life, not a lot of problems, a lot of success, and then suddenly they get a life-threatening diagnosis that seems as though it came out of the blue, for some people, what they grapple with is, you know, why did this happen? Why did it happen to me? What does it mean? What does it say about, what's supposed to happen to good people? You know, and it can rattle some of our fundamental values and belief systems. And so I say that my training in ministry comes into my counseling in the sense that kind of our emotional, psychological work, I believe, lives on a spectrum with our spiritual beliefs and spiritual resources. And I always at least invite room for all of that to be a part of what we might do when we're meeting together to, whether it's coping with an illness or trying to make a major life decision that would involve a lot of change, like moving or something like that.
So how much of your time now is spent in hospital work?
A good chunk of it. I'm about 4 days a week at what's called the Institute for Health and Healing, which is a part of a big medical center in San Francisco called California Pacific Medical Center. It's a giant urban 5-campus hospital. And I see people there in a clinic. It's not completely limited to health concerns, but it's certainly a large part of it because of the location. And then I also train students who are interested in doing the kind of work I'm doing, but I mentioned in California, you have to get 3,000 hours of experience before you could become licensed. So we have a year-long program for people who want to do health psychology, and I train and supervise them. And one day a week, I work in an oncologist's private practice. And then there's an acupuncture school and a university in the area where I often teach weekend classes. So I'm pretty busy, and I like to garden.
Well, excuse me. You actually put your hands in the earth, too?
It's what saves me.
Well, that's interesting you said it's what saves me, because I have this vision of people in the profession that you're in always hearing the sordid details, the downtrodden situations that people find themselves in, the depressing situations they find themselves in, mm-hmm. and how do you keep it from affecting you?
Yeah. Oh, boy, that's such a core question. One of the things that helps me is that while the work I do with someone may be very, hopefully, valuable and important to them, might even be pivotal in changes they make or realizations they come to, I do remind myself often that it's their life and their life path with their own ups and downs and joys and struggles and successes and disappointments, which is separate from mine. I mean, I've got my own garden variety things, of course, that I have to deal with as an individual. But I say it that way in the sense that I don't have to take theirs on as if it were mine, or in a sense, as if it were even mine to fix, even though they're coming to me for help. I see myself a little more like a facilitator that, for example, might help someone see that they've been repeating a pattern of behavior that they don't realize is part of what's creating the problem they want to change.
Mm-hmm.
or helping them see forms of strengths in themselves that I can recognize that maybe they have a very strong self-critic and they just keep kind of batting that part down within themselves, and I can help them bring that more into their awareness and into a sense of themselves.
Yeah.
And so while I'm very active with them and in their life, I at the same time recognize that the pace and the way that they're going to move through their life is their own choosing. And I certainly get moved, again, especially in the hospital. I do see people with really difficult and challenging situations. But I also see people who take those opportunities and actually make significant changes. And it's a very affirming thing for me to see someone kind of blossom and grow or feel a quality of freedom or choose healthier lifestyles than they ever had before. So it's also a mixed bag in that there's many aspects of it that are really very rewarding for me too.
You mentioned that you work in an oncologist's office.
Mm-hmm.
So are you dealing then with a significant number of cancer patients?
That's just one day a week, but yes, people are coming to that office either, you know, newly diagnosed or in treatment or even by way of follow-up where the cancer has, you know, is in remission or has been cured and are just wanting to learn ways to sustain their health and wellness and participate in that. So I do see a full range, though. I do see people actively in treatment.
Well, having had just recently a surgical episode myself as an outpatient, and then a couple of days later, it was a less than wonderful experience because I don't know how this happens. I mean, you're in a surgical operating situation where it's all sterile. I just talked to my doctor yesterday about it, and I contracted a post-operative bacterial infection.
Oh boy!
And it was in the blood system, and I was home on a Friday night, and by Sunday morning I'm out of it. I mean, I didn't even know what was going on, and Deborah's loading me in an ambulance and taking me back to the hospital. But the point is that I was at that juncture when it was critical. I was at the mercy of whatever it was that they were doing, and fortunately Deborah was there to make sure that all the T's were being crossed and the I's dotted as much as she could do that.
Yeah.
With her knowledge of me as an individual, as a person, and knowing that my blood pressure shouldn't be that low because even though they say that's a great blood pressure, my blood pressure is never that low. I'm crashing.
Too low, yeah.
But the point is, I think that I'm trying to make here is that even when I was out of it, you know, out of control as far as myself, they're asking me questions, I'm giving them answers. I go, I don't know, okay, whatever. Mm-hmm. Don't know what I said, don't know if it was right or wrong. I still had this underlying feeling that I had to somehow myself, regardless of all the help and what Deborah was doing, I had to get myself somehow together so I could try to, for lack of a better word, fight what was going on. So I could try to somehow mentally reverse my lousy feeling and the fact that I knew I had issues, but I had to do something myself. And I don't know, maybe I in some way, shape, or form did it. I don't know how I did it. I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden, through the grace of God and some good drugs, I'm okay.
Yeah, good. Yeah, that's a difficult situation. And I love what you're saying, that way of even in the midst of it being confusing and everything that was going on, finding that place inside yourself. And honestly, that is a lot of what I help teach people how to do. Not because you have to learn it from the outside, because just like you described, you discovered it. It is inside of all of us.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, most of us just kind of get caught up in the world and things we have to do and get moving at such a fast pace that we kind of lose practice of how to tune into ourselves. And I'm so happy to hear that for you it was just made itself quite available, that you could find that.
It did.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing was, I'll just relay how when this, and I know specifically when it happened. They couldn't ascertain what had happened, and I'd had a navel hernia repaired, and that's what prompted this thing, and that's the site that where the infection started, and Deborah gave them all the backgrounds and whole nine yards, and they couldn't figure out, and they thought, well, maybe something had gone drastically wrong with surgery, and so they put me in a CAT scan, and I'm laying in this CAT scan, of course it's dark. And I'm not delirious, but I'm just whacked out. And I hear this voice that says, "Close your eyes." I said, "Okay." and then the voice says, "Take a deep breath and hold it." Okay. And the next voice said, "Breathe now." And I'm laying on this gurney inside this whatever the heck I was inside of, and I'm saying, "God, is that you telling me that?" I said, "You've never spoken to me like this before."
And by the way, I have a couple questions for you.
while we're talking. but at any rate, it was... And right then I said, you know, I don't know where this voice is, but obviously it was the guy on the it was the guy on the speaker directing me what to do so he could take the pictures.
Yeah.
But after I realized what was going on and I'm in there completely out of control. I mean, I have no control over whatever it is. I had no control, and I said to myself very consciously, I do remember saying, "You've got to help yourself here. You've got to think about what you're going to do here. What are you going to do?" Because you hear these people saying things like, "You've got this disease, and you have to think of this disease as the enemy, and you have to fight it, and you have to send your white blood vessels to attack the disease, and all this imagery."
Yeah.
And this imagination, whatever. And I notice here that that's kind of leading me into this next question here with regard to guided imagery. And
yes.
Is it the same thing as visualization?
It's related. You know, I think it's unfortunate that those two terms get used interchangeably. And the reason why is that when we do imagery, which is a kind of inner awareness, very aligned with what you were describing, you connected to within yourself, we have a whole set of inner senses that mirror our external ones. In other words, you know, we have eyes to see the world, we have ears to hear, we have a nose to smell, we can touch with our hands and our skin and so forth. And when we do imagery, we use what I might call inner eyes, inner ears, inner smell, same group of senses. And the reason I don't like visualization as a term for that is not everyone has that, well, I guess I'll just call it inner vision or inner sight, as their primary or dominant way of connecting. It might be similar to what you were saying of kind of a sense of things or hearing kind of a what you need to do now coming from a deep place of guidance within yourself. And so, you know, I've had people who say, "Oh, you know, I'm not interested in guided imagery because I can't picture any pretty places or any flowers." And I'm like, well, you don't need to. You know, that's only one of the ways of tuning in. And the other thing is, I think there's kind of a misconception about what it even means to see something with your eyes closed. And I like to give this simple example. I'll ask people the question, and you and the listeners could actually try this now. It'll just take 10 seconds, which is to answer the question, how many windows do you have in your home? And we're just going to pause for a couple seconds here to come up with that answer. Okay, and I'm sure it could go on longer, but what I suspect most people did is they started taking a little tour of their house.
Exactly.
Yeah, and, you know, we didn't do any big, you know, drumming or breathing or, you know, a trance or anything. We just tuned into a form of imagery, which is so common, so natural, you know, and the picture of everyone's house, their living room, their kitchen, may or may not have been, you know, technical or clear, but if it was clear enough to acquire the information, in this case, something very simple, counting the windows, that's all we're after. It's not about perfecting the ability to see really sharply. It's just being able to glean subtle information through these internal channels that are very natural to us, but have really been sort of ignored or kind of devalued it within our own culture. But when it comes to tapping into participating in your own healing, they're incredibly valuable.
So is the term, I'm going to suggest that the term guided imagery is New Age, yes, no?
Boy, you're picking my favorite topics here. Again, I shy away from New Age because since this ability to tune into ourselves through images is a natural part of it being a human being, the way we all just did with the windows of the house, mm-hmm. it's been around as long as people have been around. And there are many, many examples of it throughout history within pretty much every religious or spiritual tradition worldwide. There's some version where images are focused on everything from contemplative Christianity to Hinduism and Buddhism. It's used in optimal sports performance, and a lot of Olympians use imagery to improve their skills. It's used in medicine, obviously, in some of the ways we may talk about more. It's used in psychology to help people get over things like phobias. So it's been around forever, and its applications are a part of just about every significant discipline. I even like to give the example in science where Einstein, a lot of people know the story where he came up with the theory of relativity because he was sort of daydreaming and imagining what it would be like to ride on a beam of light. And that was the precursor to him then translating the insights he got into mathematical formulations that are, you know, still relevant today.
That's amazing. I was not a big Einstein fan, but maybe I should become one. that's very interesting. I'm serious. Ride on a beam of light and come up with all kinds of mathematical formulas. I can use some mathematical formulas right now. I have a term for, and it's not a complimentary term, but I have a term for, and I think it's because I don't understand it. It's out there. It's we live in Arizona. Sedona, mm-hmm. Sedona, Arizona is known mm. for yeah. artisans and. Vortexes.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
and all this, and I don't know what they are. I'll be, you know, and sitting under pyramids and all this kind of stuff, and sweat lodges that people die in, and I mean, yeah. there's all kinds of stuff that goes on in Sedona, and it's beautiful country. A couple of times in my life, but I don't necessarily feel anything in my body or shattering or whatever, but I term that as just a little bit nary-fairy. And maybe it's a whole lot in Airy Fairy. I don't know. But I don't know if it's a case where I don't understand it and I don't really have a desire to understand it. And therefore, that's my defense mechanism. I just say, oh, that's whack. You know, so it, can you address those types of things?
Sure. No, you know, honestly, I'm not too far off from what you're describing in that I think it's good to be a bit skeptical, and it takes some real discernment and sifting through a whole bunch of things that get kind of lumped into one pie to find out, well, what is valid and useful and has something to it, and what is, you know, not very substantial. And I, you know, I think it takes some time to sort through that. You know, one thing I'm happy to say about guided imagery is that there is quite a body of research that is growing that speaks to kind of, well, how is it and why is it that it works, and can it really be, you know, replicated in a consistent way that whatever these claims are really pan out. And just to give you one example, because it's, I think, one of the most powerful, it came out of, this is, again, a medical application of using guided imagery, and it the research was done at the Cleveland Clinic, and it was published in a major medical journal, and it was about using guided imagery to prepare for surgery. And the type of preparation was basically to rehearse in your mind's eye, again, using the pictures of it, but every as much of making it as real as possible, that the surgery was going to go well, that there was minimal bleeding, little complications, you kind of sailed through according to plan, and that you rehearsed that several times in advance of the surgery. And they found that in doing that and studying it, that 65% reported a decrease in pain and anxiety. There were 33% fewer side effects and a 75% overall satisfaction compared to people who didn't do that. And, you know, the thing is, we all of us are experienced in what I might call negative imagery. In other words, if anyone has ever worried, you've done imagery. You just haven't done the imagery that supports your health. Because, you know, it's natural. You've got something like surgery coming up. You worry about it and what might go wrong and what if this and what if that. And this is using that same channel in our mind and our emotion, but putting the possibility of a positive outcome. And, again, it's tough because we're facing the unknown and there's no guarantees. But they are showing that if you prepare, if you include the sense that things could go well and you're aligning your intention that way, strange as it may seem, the body seems to somehow respond to that and consistently show a better outcome. Again, so much so that major hospitals are beginning to incorporate this more readily.
Well, let me tell you something. Based on what you just said, and based on what somebody said to me before I went into surgery, I absolutely set myself up for a damn near disaster. Because I was absolutely just, I was petrified about this surgery. And I don't know why. I had no good reason to be, other than the fact that I just was not comfortable. I mean, anything that I felt that anything that could go wrong was going to go wrong. And I don't normally get terrified very often. I wasn't terrified, but I mean, I was scared. I mean, I was just not comfortable. The last time I'd had a surgery, I came out of it just famously. And this one, for some reason, there was something about this. It just didn't fit with me. And explaining that to somebody, I said, you know, I've been putting off this surgery because I don't want to go do it. I just don't want it, and I don't have to have it, but I just don't want to go do it. And this person said to me, well, here's what you need to do. You need to have some positive mental thoughts. And you need to write it down on a piece of paper. And it was just what you said, almost to the T, that everything will go fine, the nurses will perform well, the surgeons mm-hmm. will be deft in their movements, and everything will be taken care of, and they're experienced, and the anesthesiologist will give you just the right amount of anesthesia so as to not cause any after effects, but yet to have you sufficiently out so you don't have any pain and feeling anything. And they said, write it all down, and then when you're in there having your preoperative discussion with the doctor, read it to him and them.
Great.
Because you are now enlisting them in the same process.
Beautiful.
That you have the confidence in them, and you know that they will do this, this, and this, and that, and mm-hmm. they will, to the best of their ability, make sure that nothing happens to me, and on and on and on, and I didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I did not do it. And as they're wheeling me into that operating room, I could feel the inside of my body just shaking.
Yeah.
And I put me out now, put me out now. Because, and look what happened. And look what happened.
Yeah. And, you know, like if just imagining that you and I were talking prior to all that, I would also want to just acknowledge that, of course, those are natural reactions. I mean, who wants to do something that has that riskiness and invasiveness and don't say the word knife, you know? Who
yeah.
wants that, right? And so I also say there's plenty of room for recognizing, acknowledging all those very natural reactions, and then learning this other tool that you just described so beautifully. Because if we, you know, as you said, there's going to be something that we kind of run over and over and over and over in our minds, and why not have it lean toward the best version of how things could go?
Well, you know, I can think back on it now, and I can say to myself, well, this is why I felt that way. Mm-hmm. And it was a surgeon. I went in for the pre-surgical examination, and he says, I think I can do this laparoscopically, but if I can't, I will not think twice to cut you from side to side to get in there and take care of this. And I'm going, whoa! I don't need to hear that. But he's one of these young buck surgeons, you know, knife happy, wielding like Zorro and his blade. And I'm just going, oh, man. Give me another doctor. It was up to the point I'm saying, give me another doctor. Give me somebody that has, you know, what is this going to be? His signature project? He's going to stitch his name into my incision, you know.
Yeah.
But he did a fine job, and I have no after effects after we cleared up the infections, and everything really is fine. But I mean, that thought process is what drove me through it. Well, I tell you, we're having so much fun talking here, Leslie. I've got to get these messages put up, so let me just play these real quick, and we'll be right back to have some more conversation.
Sounds great.
Boomer the Babe are the publishers of Boomer Series books. Our authors have their own shows on the Boomer the Babe Network. We encourage you to listen. Ron Naraki, author of the forthcoming book, The 10 Commandments of Investing, is the host of Wealth DNA, a financial show about real estate investment. Learn how to build and manage your portfolio. Ron hosts the show, and he always has good information to pass along, as do his guests. Listen to Wealth DNA on the second and fourth Monday of the month at 8 a.m. Arizona time. Tom Liggering's another Boomer Series author. His book, Success or Failure, The Choice is Yours, is the basis of the show he does with his broadcast partner, Dr. Terry Munther. Listen to Success or Failure with Tom and Terry on the fourth Wednesday of every month at 9 a.m. Arizona time. Learn how you can maximize your performance in business and in life. The methods you employ can either help or hinder. The choice is yours.
Hey, folks, John Bloom here. When I'm not broadcasting for the Cardinals or Suns, I've been spending the last couple of years with my friends building the fastest growing online golf community in the great state of Arizona. Before you book your next round of golf here, go see what golfers just like you are saying about the courses you want to play at golfmix.com. You'll get the most authentic feedback from golfers giving you information you need before you spend the money you've earned. While you're there, write a review of the last course you played and get $10 off your next purchase at Vans Golf Shops, and enter into the Greenskeeper of the Year contest for a chance to win a foursome at the home of the Waste Management Phoenix Open, the stadium course at TPC Scottsdale. Please join us for the next Golf Mixer, Saturday, October 6th at the Raven Golf Club at Verado, and play a hole with PGA Tour winner Aaron Overholser and World Long Drive champion Brian Pavlett. You can find details on golf mixers, tournaments, charity events, junior golf, and more on our statewide golf events calendar. Just check out Golf Mix, Arizona's leading golf course review site and mobile app. What are you waiting for?
Get in the mix!
At golfmix.com.
The Boomer and the Babe are proud to be affiliated with Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free. Valley View is now serving Phoenix from their new 36,000 square foot location at West Peoria and 107th Avenue in Sun City, Arizona. The new location houses the food bank, Feeding Arizona, and the Valley View thrift store. Feeding Arizona delivers food to other food banks and food pantries that are in need. If you're looking for a 501c3 to support, go to valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. All donations are welcome, be it food, money, or volunteer hours. No donation is too small. Get a hold of Jesse Ramirez, founder and director, and say, "I want to help." Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free.
And we're back on Tuesday, September 25th, 2012. We're speaking with Leslie Davenport. We're talking about guided imagery and how it helps. And we've been talking quite a bit about how it helps in the medical field. And I'm certain that it probably helps other places as well. And I want to get into some of that with you, Leslie.
Okay.
But before we go there, talk to me about going to your happy place. I've got a friend, and I told you this before, and I thought I was going to bring this up. He's got a T-shirt. He says, "Leave me the hell alone. I'm in my happy place."
I love that. That's great.
It's on his T-shirt. What is that? What is your happy place?
Well, you know, it's great that you ask about that, because it's the first thing that came to my mind when you were talking about other applications. Probably the most common, there's many, many, many applications for guided imagery, and probably the most widespread is how to use it for stress management. And most of us can benefit by figuring out a few more ways to reduce stress in our lives. So first let me describe why it works, and then I'll say what it actually is.
Okay.
And Let me start with this example. You know, when I said that if anyone has ever worried, you've done guided imagery, and we're trying to use those same channels and then turn it around in a positive way. But if you think of something like maybe you had an argument with a close friend or family member recently, and your mind keeps going back to it because you left the situation feeling unresolved. And when you're thinking about it, you might picture your face, their face, or where you were, or the things that you said or they said, or imagine what you're going to do the next time you see them. And if you take even 30 seconds, a minute, a little more doing this, if you pay attention, you'll start to notice changes in your body. And what I mean are things like a more rapid heart rate. If there was a lot of tension or upset with it, your palms might start to sweat. Your blood pressure, if we had the right kinds of equipment, your blood pressure might go up. There'd be a whole cascade of chemicals that start to get released in your body, stress hormones, things like cortisol, adrenaline. And the reason for this is that they're finding there's a machine that they're studying this with that they call a functional MRI. And what it allows the researchers to do is that when you're describing what you're thinking about, visualizing, experiencing, remembering, they can see which parts of the brain are lighting up. And what they found is that when you're imagining that argument with a neighbor, the same parts of your brain are lighting up as if you were arguing with them in real time. In other words, as far as your brain knows and your body translates, it's the same experience, whether you're imagining it or whether you're actually having that conversation. And that's the key point here, is that the images in our mind we're finding are what speak to our bodies. So just to kind of flip the table then, if you start to picture the face, let's say, of a relative, a grandchild, someone that you really love and care about, many people can notice, if you really pay attention, that there's kind of a warm, relaxing feeling that comes over you. And again, if we had the right equipment, we'd measure a lot of positive health benefits to that. So the whole notion of a happy place is that you allow yourself to imagine an environment, and it could be anything. It could be indoor or outdoor. It could be something well known to you or even imaginary. But when you imagine it, it's tranquil, it's comfortable and safe, it's refreshing. And when you're doing the imagery session itself, like if I were the guide, I wouldn't tell you what that place is. I wouldn't say, okay, now you're sitting on a beach chair on a sandy beach, because maybe you don't like beaches as much as you like something else. So I would ask you to let an image come to your mind, and then I would ask you things like, well, what colors do you notice, and what's the weather like, and are there any aromas in the air, and what about sounds, and how does it feel being here? And I help you really make it very as vivid as possible and to kind of sink into the wonderful feelings that are associated with this place. And in doing that, it's like giving your body a wellness boost. It relaxes the nervous system, it relaxes the muscle, it can lower blood pressure, it can do all kinds of wonderful things. So I know it's become almost a joke of, you know, where's your happy place? But the truth of it is, it's a wonderful stress management tool. And what I like to say is, get familiar with how to do that now. Like, even if life is going well, you know, do it before you fall asleep or first thing in the morning to kind of start your day, so that when you hit one of those stressful periods, it's already available to you. You already know how to do it. I say, you know, it's like, don't start digging the well when you're really, really thirsty. Start digging it now, so when you really need it, it's there for you. So that's basically what that is.
In my instance, I know personally from knowing myself relatively well that I could get into a less than wonderful situation with somebody, and I could walk away from it saying to myself, oh, that was just a bunch of bunk, and I'm not going to do that again, and I don't know what the heck these people are trying to prove. And I can have all this self-talk. I could be driving in my car, and all of a sudden it'll just well up at me, and I'll say, that dirty son of a... and I know my blood pressure is just going right through the roof, and I have just put myself back into that place that was not a happy place. And
yeah.
I think it's even worse, because you exaggerate it yourself,
yeah,
and it becomes a multiplier.
Very much. And especially we do that, too, with anticipating. Like you were talking about your surgery or, you
yes.
know, anticipating running into that person again, you know.
Right, right. Exactly. What am I going to say when I see him next time? I'm going to give him a piece of my mind. And you go around looking for him.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, the way you described it, it almost sounds just short of self-hypnosis.
Yes. And, yes, in fact, I would say over time, hypnosis and imagery have become more alike than the ways they used to be distinct. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. Hypnosis traditionally has been that the practitioner prescribes what you ought to imagine in order to get a beneficial result. So if we just stick with the safe place idea, they may have an idea that you ought to imagine, you know, walking through a forest or whatever it might be.
Sure.
And imagery used to be closer to the way I'm describing it and that I like to work, is that the images that have the most meaning already live within you. And it's my job just to help you get more in touch with those. But the ways they've come together is hypnosis and self-hypnosis has moved more toward personalizing it to the individual rather than believing the practitioner has the right prescription. And guided imagery has at times used a more scripted approach. So to many people, they are these days one and the same, and it'll partly just depend on who you're working with, of how far they fall along one end or the other of that spectrum.
I understand that in your book, which I have not had the pleasure of reading, you describe one of the steps to practicing imagery as traveling inward.
Yes. Yes. Let me describe that a little bit. In a really overly simplified picture of our minds, our brains, and how it works, a lot of people have heard about the difference between the right hemisphere and the left hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
And the left hemisphere is the part that most of us use most of the time. It's good for planning and rational thinking and weighing the pros and cons, and that's all great. But I always say, well, why not use all of your brain, which includes the more intuitive sides or the right brain or the part that imagery gets us in touch with. And that way you can use it all. And so when I say traveling inward, what it is it's shifting out of left brain activity into the right. And the way we do that is by closing our eyes, usually, and starting to withdraw from all the things that attract our attention in the world. So we're not going to be listening to music and we're not going to be looking at what's in our house. We're going to close our eyes and let that be separate for a little while and bring our attention to our body and our breathing and just take several full deep breaths, starting to relax the body. And we take time like that for probably 3 or 4 minutes, what's called progressive relaxation and deep breathing. And that automatically starts to shift us from the left brain into the right brain. And by doing that, then when I say you're already deeply relaxed, you're not worrying about what you have to do later in the day or your shopping list, I'll say invite an image to form of a place that would really support these relaxing feelings. And it's just much easier to get in touch with the images of that happy place environment once you're already relaxed. So
gotcha.
That's what the traveling inward is.
Okay. I'm imagining that there are misconceptions about this whole process.
Mm-hmm.
And there are probably some myths, then also there are the facts. What,
yes.
What are some of the misconceptions, myths, and facts?
Well, you know, we've touched on a couple of them, which is great. Like, for example, the one that you have to be able to picture things. You have to visualize and picture
right.
pretty places.
Right.
So that's one that a lot of people get tripped up on. One that I really like is that you have to believe in the power of imagery in order in order for it to be effective, because you don't. All you have to do is give it a try, because, again, it's a natural part of us. And here's the example that I think really shines a light on why this is true. So when we go to the movies, and let's say it's a suspenseful action adventure movie, it's our rational mind knows, okay, this is fictional, nobody's really being hurt, you know, these are just characters, actors. But what makes it fun is that even though we know that rationally, the images on the screen are affecting our body, so we gasp and we sigh and our heart beats faster and we, you know, get involved in the life of the characters. Because, the images on the screen, in spite of knowing it's fictional, are, in a sense, are speaking to our body. They're making our heart go faster. They're changing how we sit on the edge of our seat. And it's that same impact that happens when our eyes are closed. So it doesn't matter if it's imaginary and your rational mind knows, well, there really is no forest that looks quite like this. It doesn't matter. Because we're tapping into the qualities of the place that are nevertheless affecting our body. So, I mean, if someone really, really, really wanted to fight imagery and say, I don't believe in it, you know, and they didn't give it an honest try, they probably could block the process. But if it's just kind of, well, let me see what this is like. Let me see if it makes a difference. Almost everyone I've worked with can find that ability much more easily than they even anticipated.
Well, I tell you, I when you start talking about going to the movies, I can relate exactly to what you're talking about, and we're talking way back in the day. We went to see a movie, Cliffhanger, with Stallone, I think it was.
Okay.
And it was breathtaking. At where we saw it in the movie was breathtaking, taking cinematography, mountains and snow, and this unbelievable story. I don't know if there was much of a story, but it was all about people hanging off wires as they're trying to cross gorges and whatever. And I get out of that movie, and I just took a deep breath. And I said, "Man, I'm exhausted."
Yeah.
Because it sucked me right in so big, and I went, wow, I'm exhausted. So I can understand how people can get involved in situations like that. And and if they allow themselves to get involved in situations through their own imagery and their own imaginings, they could have a very significantly positive effect. But if they're not careful, it could have a very, very deleterious effect.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at the clock on the wall here, and we're down to the short rows, as they say in farm country. So I want you to have plenty of opportunity to give your shameless self promotion about everything that you do, and how people can get hold of you, and so go ahead and go to your happy place and be shameful.
Well, great. I guess I want to speak of it really as a wide open invitation for people to give imagery a try, because there's so much benefit that can come from it, and it's so accessible. And I've made a lot of these resources available through my website, which is my name, LeslieDavenport.com, LeslieDavenport.com. And there's about, I think I have 7 or 8 free recordings. You just click and play off the computer, or if you have something like an iPhone, iPod, MP3 player, you can download them and listen later. Some free articles. And it just gives you a chance to check it out in a little more depth, a little more with direct experience. What is this, and might it be helpful to me? And then the book that you mentioned, Healing and Transformation Through Self-Guided Imagery, is a how-to book. It's about how to guide yourself into the images that live within you, become more aware of the ones that may not be supporting your health, and how to cultivate the ones that do. And then if someone wanted even more direct support around this, I'm based in San Francisco, but I do phone sessions and Skype sessions, so that it's easy to do it no matter what the location is. And if you just have a quick question, you can also send me an email via my website as well.
Very good. Very good. And that website again was?
LeslieDavenport.com.
Okay, nice and easy and simple, and everything spelled the way it's normally spelled, so we don't have to worry about it being difficult and being misspelled on the search.
Yeah.
The book is available on Amazon, I would imagine?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
Is it available as an e-book as well as a hardcover book?
It is. It's both. It was printed by Random House, so they're good about having the paperback and the e-book.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Well, Leslie, I tell you, this has been one of the most fast-paced hours that I've done in a while. and I'm looking at this list of things, and I'm like, geez, we just have another show here.
yeah, I'd be happy to come back.
Well, I tell you, we're going to have to take a look at doing that. That's for sure. I'm going to give you a call as soon as this show's over. There's a couple of things I need to talk to you about and how you can get this and use it and so on. So I'll just say goodbye and thank you very much for being a great guest. And I certainly enjoyed all the conversation today. I really appreciate your taking the time to be with me.
Oh, me too. Thanks to you too.
Take care now.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And you've been listening to Leslie Davenport of LeslieDavenport.com talking about healing and transformation through self-guided imagery. Very interesting conversation today, and we're certainly glad that she was able to spend some time with us. So with that, we'll say goodbye as well. Have a great rest of the day, everybody, and we'll be back again as the week goes on. Keep looking for us. We're not far away, and we hope to see you and hear you come back with us again. Have a great day, everybody. Take care.
You've been listening to the Boom and the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerandthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.